following interview was conducted with Ms. Cleo Young on behalf of the New South Voices for the Brooklyn Neighborhood Oral History Project. It took place on March 29th at Ms. Young's residence. The interviewer is Tamara Dial.
I'm going to think about how I want to start it. I started work with Mecklenburg County Health Department in 1940, September the 15th. First, I was employed as city employee. I worked in what was the name of the school in Brooklyn? Wait a minute. I'm sorry about this. If you had told me this, I would have had something written down. Wait a minute.
Elementary school?
It was an elementary school in Brooklyn.
Myers Street School?
Myers Street. Mm-hmm. Okay, now, I don't know why, I thought I said Myers Park. Mm-hmm. I worked as a visiting field nurse and a school nurse. My schools were, Myers Elementary School and Second World High School. I checked in my schoolwork consists of checking the children, each child in each grade, for dental work and anything that might necessitate being seen by a doctor. I also, my hours at one school was twice a week, 2 hours each time. My hours at Second World was the same, twice a week, 2 hours each time. But even at that, we were there for any emergencies. Also, during the time, I checked all the children, different days by different classes. In my visiting, and we also did visiting home nursing for children. For instance, if I found a child that might need dental work, I visit the home and fill out blanks. If the parents were not able to afford a fiery doctor, they were referred to the clinic, and they had to be many blanks filled out for this. We did have a dental clinic located in Myers school, where one of the elementary school there where I worked, Isabella White School. And all of the children from various schools or various schools all over the city could go there for dental work. In visiting the homes, not only did we visit for dental defects, but we visit for any defect that we found that a child needed to have further medical service. And in the visit, we visit all newborns. We checked all birth certificates. And my district was in Brooklyn, which Maggie and I had boundary lines from McDowell Street, including Blue Heaven, all the way back. And also in all the way over Boundary Street, including, Second Street, First Street, Second Ward High School. In other words, my boundary was all of Brooklyn that I visited homes. When we reported in the office in the morning, I would get my calls from the office and I knew all the homes that I had to visit that day. If I had school visits to do, I also include them in my visiting during the day. We worked 5 days a week, and back then, sometime, we had, for emergencies, we had to work on Saturday. If we worked on Saturday, we worked from 8:30 until 12. That was only emergency. Maybe once, maybe three or four times during the year, we would work on Saturday. But that was called overtime, and we would receive time and a half for that overtime during our schedule. We rode the bus. We had tickets to ride the bus, and we rode the bus in our visits all during the... I can't recall how many years, but I know it was maybe 10 or 15 years we rode the bus. You want me to tell it all?
You can tell it all.
Of course, the Afro-American nurses rode buses while the white nurses had kind of cars, and they rode, they had cars during that time. This all happened before segregation, because segregation did not start until in the late 50s. And we only visited in the black homes, Afro-American homes. And of course, all of the schools were segregated. They were all black at that particular time. Some of our cases were outstanding because if we needed a doctor, we would report back to the office and fill out a statement, and we had such service in the office where the secretary, or we had a person employed, and she would have to call different doctors to go out on different cases. And the doctors even would go out in the homes at that time and deliver babies. We had a maternity clinic located at the health department. This is on Fulton Street. And in that maternity clinic, we had doctors that worked this clinic from Memorial Hospital at that time. And nurses, certain nurses were assigned to the clinic different days to come in and work. We also had well baby clinics, and these well baby clinics were located all over Brooklyn. We had one at the House of Prayer, one at the school where I worked. There were two clinics that I was involved in at that particular time. We also had clinics at Fairview Home and different locations all over Charlotte. And certain nurses would be assigned to help in these clinics whatever days they were. And there we saw newborn babies, babies we gave shots for diphtheria, whooping cough, we vaccinated for smallpox. And the babies, we always had a pediatrician in the clinic that would see and examine the babies. These clinics were held usually from 1 o'clock until 4. In other words, they were held until we finished. If we had a crowd, we would stay there until we finished all the work. I enjoyed my work because there was so much that I felt that I gave to the clients in my area, in talking and working with them with their children in school and all. And I did enjoy my work, my school work. I would go to all the PTA meetings where I met so many of the parents that I did not see in the homes or at the baby clinics. And I enjoyed that. I worked closely with the teachers. At that time, they worked closely with the nurse. And we had really personal contact, and this is the thing that I felt that caused really continue work with children.
That it?
What else you want? Well, and you want me to tell about Brooklyn?
Yeah, I want you to tell me about Brooklyn too, but I have a couple of questions I want to go
okay.
back to from what you talked about.
Okay.
When you said that you would go to the office and if a case needed a doctor, well, were all of those doctors black or did it matter when they were
the
cases in the home?
The ones that set out,
mm-hmm.
no, the doctors, they were white. Any doctor that were that would visit. We had several doctors that would visit,
mm-hmm.
and they were black and white.
Mm-hmm. And did any of the white doctors have problems going to Brooklyn or any of these other places for house calls?
No, because they were Dr. Chambers that would go on Sunday mornings.
Mm-hmm.
And Dr. Robinson, Dr. Chambers, Dr. Robinson, Dr. Cho, they were the white ones. Of course, they all dead now, honey.
Mm-hmm.
And Dr. Wilkins, Dr. Blackman, those were some of the other doctors that would visit, you know, in the homes. Of course, way back, Dr. Craig, Dr. Tyson, they all would visit. But Dr. Wilkins were really one of the main ones that would visit the homes. See, back then, all doctors didn't like to visit homes. But back then, they were new and wanted money, I guess. And see, in the county paid, they were paid by the county. See, the county paid them so for their visits.
For
Dr. White, yeah.
For the nurses that were in your sections, all of them were black? All the nurses that worked in your, like, areas or worked with the...
In the clinics, yes.
In the clinics, they were
yes.
all black?
Mm-hmm.
And were you guys allowed to work on white students or white patients?
No.
You weren't allowed
we
to?
We all had black patients.
Mm-hmm.
And all the ones that visited the clinic were black. And they had white clinics. They had baby clinics. They were white, too. First Ward School, First Ward was a place. They had clinics in different places, but they were white and housed by the white nurses.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
When you would get up, so your type of transportation was going by bus
yes,
within
by
Brooklyn?
Bus. We had tickets.
You had tickets?
We had, no, see, we'd ride for home. I'd leave my home and catch the bus, mm-hmm. ride to the health department. And after I get to the health department and get my schedule and my work for the day, then I would check out in Brooklyn. Well, see, the bus on the run, McDowell Street, when I leave McDowell Street and get off the bus, for instance, if I started the block, the 200 block, and maybe I had a call in the 900 block, I'd catch the bus rather than to walk nine blocks. But my calls might be on Long Street, Bounder Street, or anything, but I had to walk down in there to get to them. I had no transportation there. The same thing here at Batesford Road. We would ride the bus and get off on Booker Avenue. We would have a mile and a half to walk to the end of Booker if we had a call, say, the 2500 block of Booker. See, we had to walk, whether it's rain or snow or if we working or not. That was it. Nothing go down there. See, we didn't have cars then to ride down there. We walked.
That's right. Okay.
And we packed our little bags every morning. We had bags. And our bags consist of alcohol, little bottles, and we in other words, we refurnished our bags every morning. And newspaper on top, where we'd carry six or seven pieces of newspaper. When we get in a home, we would never put our bag down, just put it down. We had to spread paper and put it down. And we had to explain to the patients that we knew she was nice and clean and everything, but this was our way of keeping our things sterile and clean. And we weighed babies and all in the home and checked the babies, checked the birth certificates.
Now, during the time period that you did this within the Brooklyn community, around when did you stop doing the home visits and being a school nurse in Brooklyn? Or how long did you do that?
Oh, no. I started September 15, 1940. Oh, well, see, after then, well, I worked in more in Brooklyn, but Brooklyn was my station location. Because I worked in Third Ward, I worked in Biddleville, I worked in First Ward, I worked in, you know, different places. But I worked for 15 years or more, and that was at the health department on 4th Street. Mm-hmm.
How was your job affected in any way, either positively or negatively, by integration? Like, once they started to integrate the different schools and or urban renewal, how did that affect the type of work that you did?
Oh, well, now, I was not doing this when the integration came. They had a new health department on Blythe Boulevard, and I was working then. Mm-hmm. And, of course, my era then was Alamo School and Independence. Mm-hmm. I was the black nurse sent out there because they said, send Cleo, she can handle it. And they did. I had Independence High School and Alamo Elementary School.
Okay.
That's what I had. And we also had teams, and we worked in all clinics. White nurses worked in the black clinics, the black nurses worked in the white clinics.
Okay.
And that was it. And we had white schools, because, you know, Independence was white. It was different nurses were assigned. Mm-hmm. And we stayed at the health department in the family planning. They would come in, like, certain nurses might have to come in and work in this clinic today, but it was all together. It wasn't just black and black. It was, mm-hmm. it was integration.
Mm-hmm.
But now, not that all the parents accepted us liberally, you know. Mm-hmm. There was always, especially school nurses, school at Independence, if I had to visit, and maybe something I couldn't do on the over the phone and had to go into the home to do it. And just like at school, at Albemarle Elementary School, what they call middle school now, there were visits that I had to make, like when a child said she was sick and didn't come to school. And I had to go in that home and visit. And I'll just give you an example. The mattress was on the floor, and the daddy, or stepdaddy, was in the bed with the daughter. You know, those kind of things. And when I had to write what I found. See? And of course, sometimes they didn't like. This is why they didn't like, because really some of the stuff that was going on in the white area was much worse than was going on in our areas. You'd be surprised.
Wow.
They would use them for prostitution and everything else. And see, we worked in the BD clinics and all, and we knew. And they would come in there with gonorrhea, and then when they gave the contacts, it would be, you'd be surprised, would sometimes be the daddies and the brothers and the great lord. That was it.
Well, when you travel, during the time that you were working in Brooklyn area, I want to go back a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
When you travel, because you didn't just work in Brooklyn, you worked in other black neighborhoods,
yeah,
in Charlotte.
Yeah, that's right.
How would you know the borders, whether you were in, like, Brooklyn versus Cherry versus...
Well, you know the streets. Mm-hmm. For instance, if I had to go to Cherry, well, you didn't have to keep it that way. You just put the addresses down. For instance, if I might have a call, and although I have Brooklyn, I might have a call in First Ward on 9th Street. Well, only thing, I put my address, that didn't matter about where I went,
mm-hmm.
you know, or where I went to Cherry or came out in Billville. Mm-hmm. It didn't matter.
Okay, so you just went to wherever your
That's right, wherever on. Addresses that I had calls to.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Well, even, did you live in Brooklyn?
No.
What part of Charlotte did you
live in? I lived out here. I lived on Campbell Street,
mm-hmm.
6 blocks from Johnson C. Smith.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And then how would you get to work every day?
Ride the bus.
So you ride the bus to work too?
Yeah. Okay. I told you, I catch the bus on the corner out there,
uh-huh.
on Bayesford Road, and ride to work.
Okay.
And catch the bus in the evening and ride home.
Other than going to work, were there any other reasons to go to Brooklyn for you?
Oh, yes. 2nd Street was on Brooklyn. The theater, well, that was the only enjoyment. The drugstore was in Brooklyn. My doctor was in Brooklyn.
Mm-hmm.
And, churches were in Brooklyn, not my church. Because my church was on 7th Street always, on the corner of 7th and College, when I came to Charlotte.
What was the name of your church?
First United Presbyterian.
Mm-hmm. And didn't Brooklyn Presbyterian?
Yeah, but merge with
us. Merge with them.
That's right.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So what drugstore in Brooklyn did you go to?
Oh, I don't know what the name of the drugstore now. It was just a soda stand. They called, mm-hmm. It was a drugstore, though. It was run by Dr. Dr. McKeithen was a sister. Miss McKeithen, and they were shoe shops in Brooklyn, and was run by McKissick, Dr. McKissick. I think that was his name. Anyway, the drugstore. And Y was in Brooklyn on Brevard Street. Weasley Y, whatever. Because I made talks. Oh yeah, we would go out and made talks, because I made talks to some of the programs at the Y, you know, like talking to girls about cleanliness and all that, you know. And we had health education. And I don't know why they would always get me, and I can't talk, but I would always do something.
What made Brooklyn different from the other black neighborhoods in Charlotte? Or why was it?
Well, that was the only thing that had entertainment, because the drug stores and cafes were over there, and the drug the places, eating places. And that's what made it. Second Street was it. Mm-hmm.
So everything was located on Second Street.
Yeah, Second and First. Mm-hmm. So that was it.
Did you have a favorite cafe or anything that you liked to go visit in Brooklyn?
There wasn't nothing that you could say favorite. You went to whatever you could go to. There wasn't maybe but one or two or whatnot, like the drugstore or cafe, and you'd go eat. You know, it wasn't like now. And you may go somewhere, and there was little ice cream stands, you know, on McDowell Street. And the theater was on McDowell Street. And and the House of Prayer was there, of course. And not that we participated in, the only liquor store in the beginning was on McDowell Street. And that was it. I used to go in the ice cream parlor and sit down and eat ice cream, you know, because see, if we take a lunch hour, we had somewhere to maybe to go to people's houses or something. We didn't have places to go get a drink of water unless we had a house to go to. Funeral homes were on First Street, funeral home was on Second Street, and I knew all the funeral parlor people. Mr. Pearson ran a funeral home, Mr. White man looked like his wife. Had a funeral home over here. He had a funeral home. Pearson and they lived in Cherry. Can't think. Anyway.
Mr. Greer?
Greer. Greer had a funeral home on the corner of Second and Alexander. And Alexander School was on the second was on First and Alexander, the school. And his funeral parlor was there. And sometimes I'd go sit in the funeral home. And then on the next corner of Myers and First, Minnie Price husband, J.C. Graham, ran a food stand, a cafe. And I'd go there sometime and sit and eat my lunch. You know, and they would fix, they had, you could get out your hot dog or you could buy a sandwich or something. And, let's see, that's about all the eating places. And of course they had a fish market over there. And, on Second Street. But only Second Street was the it. They would just congregate over there on Sunday nights, you know, just to talk and be around, you know. People would be over there like that, you know, just whether they were married, husband and wives or nothing, you know. Not that I would go all the time, but under the men, if my husband would go, he thought he couldn't live unless he go to Second Street at night, and I'd be ready to kill him, but he would go. Yeah.
Well, because we've talked about some of the businesses that were located in Brooklyn. What about
barbershops?
Barbershops?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, barbershop was on McDowell and barbershop on Second Street.
from your experiences, especially with being a nurse who did home visits, what were, could you describe some of the housing that was in the Brooklyn neighborhood? Or
The ones down at the lower end in Blue Heaven, sometime you could go and you could look down through the floor and see the dirt, and you could look up and see the sky, and that was all in Brooklyn too. And even right there on 4th Street, what they call 4th Street Alley, was the same thing. There were so many alleys. There were a lot of alleys in Brooklyn. Yeah, the houses were not like that. Most of them, a lot of them were these little gunshot houses. You walk in the front door and you walk all the way through to the back. And they did not have bath and running water, things of that sort.
Were there any nice homes? Were there any nice homes in Brooklyn?
Yeah. On Bonder Street, there were some nice homes, very nice. Long Street, yeah, because Miss Murphy, some of these school teachers, honey, they were living right there. On Long Street, Miss Murphy lived, and Bonder Street, and, yeah, Bonder Street, Long Street, McDowell Street, too. You found these other homes down in Blue Heaven, back in there in the alley lot, you know. But there was a laundry in Blue Heaven. There was a laundry back there. Blue Heaven Laundry. And then lately they had been built some apartments and things, you know, but they were full family usually. So, okay. Sorry about that.
That's fine. Could you tell me about some of your experiences in, like, on a house call in Brooklyn, in the Brooklyn neighborhood, or could you?
House calls.
Yeah.
Well, the people were always nice, very nice. Now, I worked with a lot of the House of Prayer people, see, but they were always nice. And I also worked in a clinic in Brooklyn on 4th Street. We had for the clinic, I would work in the mornings. Now, that was really my first year of work. I worked directly in the clinic where people would come in with defects and different things. They'd come in for shots, like, and I worked in the VD clinic doing the walk. Doing the walk. And now that was some experience where they had to give, you know, these injections and see, because the camp was out here, Camp Green, you know. And that's the reason I don't ever put money in my mouth, because I pull too much out of pajamas. But you don't need to put that in there. I mean, you put them on the table, honey, and they would have these $20 bills stuck up in their pajamas, up in there.
What about some of your experiences in the schools of Brooklyn? Could you tell me about a funny experience that something happened when you were working with some of the students in one of the schools?
Oh, one day, I can tell you about some experience in the clinic.
That's fine.
I know I wasn't white. I wasn't light. But this little boy, we had other nurses in the clinic, and some of our nurses were not my complexion. This little boy said to his mama the other one day, mama, he was just crying and hollering, going on. His mama said, you gonna take this shot. You gonna take, please, mama, let that chocolate nurse over there give me this shot. I was the chocolate nurse, and the other nurse was black. I was the chocolate one.
Oh.
So that was, you know, it just always tickled me, and I knew, you know, it just tickled. Most of the children were nice people. Sometimes, you know, they were very, children were very reluctant to warning or injection, you know. Then we had to, sometimes the mamas had to coax them and hold them and talk to them about it, you know. And really, we would show them, you know, we'd have a banana, I mean, an orange or something, and show them it didn't hurt, you know, and things like that. But, it was just usually work and experience. I don't remember anything particularly happening that was, you know, outstanding.
Mm-hmm.
But we would have children with nails in the, step on nails and needles or something in the feet, you know, and things of that sort, and the doctor would have to pull it all out. They were always reluctant about that. We just had a little bit of everything, you know. And now we don't, we used to see children with hair lip, you know what they call, but we don't see that now. And birth defects, you don't find them as birth defects. That's one thing in life now. You don't find birth defects now like you did back in the 40s and 50s because of better maternity care. Well, that's one thing you can, I observed as I worked for years, you know. And you really do not find as many really don't find as many eye defects because they are recognized early. You know, better medical care now with especially maternity patients. And this is so good, and that's something I observed up in my nursing, you know, as I was able to stay in it that long, you know, and seeing and working, seeing some of the, see, because in my work, I have babies, mamas, and grandbabies that I saw working, babies that I nursed when they were born. They grew up and they had babies. That was before I retired.
Wow. Okay. We've discussed some of the stuff, you know, about how Brooklyn was, and I wanted to talk a little bit about how Brooklyn was affected by urban renewal. And
oh, well, see, they tore down all the houses and built businesses and McDowell Street, see, with the hotel and the banks, and they renovated the school, Myers Street School. They have water aerobic there, you know. In other words, that school was ready. They tore down Second Wall School, and the First Baptist Church is there. And in other words, they tore down Blue Heaven, nothing but businesses over there, hospitals. They have the health place where these diabetics go and get their change of blood, you know, all that. And it's just nothing but business. There's no houses over there at all, period, in Brooklyn.
How did that, by taking away all the housing and those different things in Brooklyn during urban renewal, how did that affect the other black communities in Charlotte?
Well, people had to find homes. They started moving in, see, areas that were white, black moved in it. Just like Trade Street, that was all white. And Statesville Avenue, all behind the, off there, all that was, that area was nothing but white. Like all those streets were white. The whites stopped moving out when the blacks stopped moving in. And now all those areas is nothing but black.
Go ahead.
Cherry, well, see, Cherry had a little, had some black anyway, but that expanded Cherry because they moved further into the white, and the white that was near around moved on up. So it really affected all of them. And First Ward, it affected First Ward because First Ward School was white. And when the blacks started moving at 9th Street and all that Dr. White and all of them lived, all the white moved out. But those were better homes and everything, and they had them. See, because I had gone in First Ward School with a nurse, and I saw lice. See, they would have lice in with the children all at that time, see. So that's the way it affected. Mm-hmm.
Did any of the businesses that used to be located in Brooklyn once urban renewal came, did any of them move to other places?
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, they moved out on Batesville Road, like the business, Flat, the drugstore, and the little social business like Flat Tire and all those. And of course, the club was built. Jimmy McKee built the club, and they had the black folks at a club then. Because Jimmy wasn't in Brooklyn, you know, at that with no club. Mm-hmm. And the funeral homes were moved on Statesville Avenue, and moved out. Mm-hmm.
Do a lot of those, or do any of those businesses still exist today that moved out of Brooklyn and moved to other places?
Mm-hmm. Grill. Mr. McCarroll, he's over there on 16. Now, that's where he moved. Mm-hmm. On 16, of course, you know, they moved over here first, and they broke up, you know. And, of course, somebody's over there, you know, say something, but it's not Greer. You know, McCarroll, it's something else, Mungo or something. Mm-hmm. But that was in Brooklyn. And the shoe shop that was in Brooklyn, he moved out on Batesford Road. Mr. McKissick. See, a little bit of everything was in Brooklyn. Anything you had to have. Now, nobody didn't know where the fish market went. And, of course, they built the Y. You know, they built the Y out here. The Y was in Brooklyn, see.
Which Y is that, the one?
Mm-hmm.
Down Batesford, Johnson?
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. See, it was on the corner of the men and the women. The women were on Bavard Street, and the men were on the corner of 3rd and something over there. All of them moved, see. See, they built a black one, a beautiful, the men out here. And, of course, the men and women, they built it together. Yeah, that was in Brooklyn, too. And daycare, 70, yeah, it was. They had a daycare center. And they moved, they built, on Statesville Avenue, they built a church. No, that's right. They wasn't Seventh-day Adventist, but they were what? What is that other denomination that meet on Saturday? What are those people?
Jehovah's Witness?
No. Uh-uh. Catholic. Catholic. Uh-huh. And, of course, they built House of Prayer all over. Because there wasn't but one House of Prayer, and that was in Brooklyn. They tore that down, you know. Mm-hmm. And they built one. Everywhere got one, has one now. Every era. Third Ward, Biddleville. Over here, they got them everywhere. First Ward. And they have their own units as for family units, too. They have housing units.
So Urban Renewal, the reason? The different house of prayers, once they knocked down the one in Brooklyn, that's when they started moving to the other places?
That's right. And building. Yes, ma'am.
Okay. And was there a lot of opposition to Urban Renewal when it came through in the black community?
I don't think you could say that. I wouldn't say that.
Mm-hmm. So most people were okay about Urban Renewal happening in Brooklyn?
Well, you know, it was going to happen. This is something the state did. You know, a lot of it. And, of course, you had no say-so. It's just like the housing project in First Ward. When they tore down with my father-in-law, that was the house I lived over there. I lived over in First Ward when I first came to Charlotte, 2 years. And they came through and say what they were going to do. And, of course, they were going to pay you a little money for so-and-so, and they had it all mapped out, baby, because they had worked at night while we were sleeping. That's what they did. And it was that way all the way, all of Brooklyn. They went around, they knew who everybody, it was well, everybody owned, and they had it mapped out how much they were going to pay you and everything else. And see, you had to find a place to live. Of course, now you didn't have to move. They gave you a certain time to find a place. This is why they built, you know, some of these places for black people to move, see. It's just like Fairview Homes. Of course, now Fairview Homes was there first. But they built some other, I tell you, not the Fairview Homes. What's these houses over here? The Alexander man had a lot to do with them. I can't remember what you call them houses, but anyway, they built those units. They got one over here. They have one in Third Ward. You know, just houses, nice houses, like off Statesville Avenue, that unit over there. They built those for people to move.
Do you think that the housing that they got after Urban Renewal was better than the housing they had in Brooklyn?
Oh, Lord, yeah. Yes, Jesus. Those aren't that old little houses they had in Brooklyn, first of all, and everything had been there. You know, they got a little sample of one down there by the church on 7th Street, down there by the place. Historical place down there. They kept one of those little gunshot houses down there. You ought to go down there and see it sometime.
You mean by the African American Cultural Center?
Way down on 7th Street.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, that's the way those houses in Brooklyn looked, most of them. As I say, now, there were a few nice ones, but on the big street, like Bonja Street, McDowell Street, those were the only, and 2nd Street, and 1st Street. Now, those main streets, like, they were paved, there were some nice houses. But after you leave those and go down in there, you found, especially Blue Heaven.
So the nice big houses were like around the front, and then you go deeper down into the neighborhood.
Well, it was on the nice streets.
On the nice streets.
Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
What lessons do you think that, like, politicians or even people in the black community should take from the experience of Brooklyn?
Should do what?
Well, what lessons should politicians or people from the black community have taken from urban renewal and the experiences in Brooklyn? Should we have learned anything from it in the black community, or was it?
Yes. They have learned. Of course, now, if you know, of course, if they have, they have. But now, if you know, most of those people have passed on. See?
Mm-hmm.
Most of the people have gone on. Now, if they did not teach their children, it's just like integration. See, and the renewal was before integration, wasn't it? Or all at the same time? What was first?
Well, the plans for renewal started around in like the 1940s, but it didn't really start going in place until about the same time as integration.
That's right. And see, the children that have come, if the parents, and if each plenty of them have never learned, because children now, they do not respect and know what we as black people, some of us, went through for them to be doing what they do now and go where they go now. See, they just thought it all was there. But they didn't know the time when you walked in a place and you was spit, when you had to get on the bus and sit in the back of the bus. They don't know that, see?
So the people who were there learned, but a lot of them failed to teach their children.
That's right.
That lesson.
That's right. Exactly.
Just my last couple of questions.
That's all right.
God, this has been so great. With participating in this oral history class, we're interested in the interaction between the interviewer and the interviewee.
Mm-hmm.
And can you tell me if my race, gender, or the fact that I'm affiliated with UNC Charlotte affected any of the answers you gave me today?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And do you think there were any topics or issues that you thought I should have brought up during the interview?
Well, churches. What you want to know about the churches and how people felt about, well, now back then, more people I think went to church. I do reveal that when it comes to age and age group.
Mm-hmm.
And there were more children in church. In some churches, I know in mine, and I feel, you know, that, well, I don't know, it just seemed like people were a little more religious in years to come. I mean, because there's too many activities and too many physical things now, such as games, and because, honey, now, oh, there's going to be a game, and tell the preacher to preach. The preacher can't, we got to be out here at 12:30, you know. But back then, we didn't have those things. And, of course, we had Sunday school after service, see. And our Sunday school would always be packed. But now, time brings about changes. And you know why? Because of all of these activities and different things, TVs, radios, and computers and all that now. They have other things to do. So that's all that detracts from some, I would say. Now that's my feeling, religious activities.
Well, could you tell me about some of the churches that were located in Brooklyn?
They had Brooklyn Presbyterian Church, the House of Prayer Church, Seventh-day Adventist Church. I did not attend these churches, but I knew they were there. They had Baptist churches. Or there was a Baptist church on 2nd Street. That church now has moved out on North Charlotte. Can't even think of the name of it. I can stop, can't I? If you would.
Okay.
Ebenezer Baptist Church was located on 2nd Street, and it was one of the biggest churches in Brooklyn for black people. Of course, now there were Brooklyn, the church of Presbyterian Church. Brooklyn Presbyterian was a nice church, too. And the Seventh-day Adventist Church. And there were other small churches there. Of course, the House of Prayer was there. And it was, of course, a big church, too, at that particular time. Okay.
And when, after urban renewal, did these churches move to other places, or did some of them just stop existing?
No. Brooklyn Presbyterian Church merged with us, with 7th Street on 7th Street, First United. It was 7th Street at that time, now it's First United. And, of course, there were House of Prayers built all in every location of Charlotte at that particular time. And the Seventh-day Adventist moved out here in Oakland Avenue. They moved in that housing development out here. And of course, they have a big church. That's a congregation too. They are really big.
Right. Really quickly, just because of just so much time that you spent on this earth, I was wondering, did you ever, as a child, hear anyone talk about slavery or know anyone who was
sure,
former slave?
My great grandmama was a slave. And of course, by my great grandmama being a slave, you know, I was a big girl when my grandmother died. So my grandmother knew, ever talking to me and told me a lot about slavery.
Mm-hmm. Could you talk to me about some of the things that she would tell you?
Yeah. My grandmama told me that her daddy was white. And of course, her mother, who was my great grandmama, did not have to work in the field or do any hard work. She was a cook in the big house. And of course, she was just a little girl, a baby, and of course, she didn't have to do anything either. And she told me the excursions and thing, the master and all those people would go on and what big parties they would have at that particular time. And she felt so sorry for some of the people that had to work, especially in the fields, because most of them had big plantations and things of that sort. And, you know, she told me.
And where your family, you're from South Carolina, what part of South Carolina?
Darlington.
So were there experiences that they were describing to you happened in that area, in Darlington?
Well, what? Well, no, my mother really came from, they got off the boat in Charleston.
Mm-hmm.
When they came to South Carolina, where they came from, I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
See, during that time, that was my mother.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, my father, he came from Florida, Jacksonville, Florida. Mm-hmm. Now and I knew his mother was a Indian. And she was one of these Indians with the good hair. And she worked all her life for white. And doing her time, between times and all, a lot of her children were daddies of the people on the plantations and whatnot. They had different names and different daddies and whatnot. And of course, my mother married, her life was different. She wasn't, you know, all her children were by one man, you know. And, but my grandmother, I have an uncle who lived in Savannah, and he went as white, but he never did deny us, my mother, who was his sister. And he helped her and helped us because we were on a farm. All of them are dead now, but he was always very nice. Now, his wife resented us. She couldn't stand us, but he would come every summer and spend 2 weeks with my mother. And he bought me the first coat, bought coat that I'd ever had, and the first bought dress that I'd ever wore, because Mama made all clothes. But he bought me some clothes. He ran a bar, they were Grants in Savannah, Georgia. They're still Grants. His great-grandchildren live there, and they're Grants. But they don't have nothing to do with us now, you know. But that was a delight.
What kind of farm did you grow up on?
What kind of farm did we have? Oh, my dad had a big farm. We raised tobacco, cotton, corn, beans, peas, peanuts, everything.
Was it like sharecropping or did he own it?
Nobody. My dad owned his farm. Okay. 300 horse farm or something. He had 2 mules and 2 horses.
And why did you move to Charlotte? What made you move to Charlotte?
I went in school in Columbia, and I met my husband in Columbia, and he was from Charlotte. This was his home, so you had to follow the man. So I had to move back here.
Okay.
I had to move here.
All right, and then that's when you started practicing as a nurse in Brooklyn.
Yeah, I had to see it. Well, that's when I was employed. Because, see, all during that time, I had my children, too. But I was employed by the health department. Okay.
All right. Well, thank you, Ms. Young. I appreciate you taking time out of your schedule to talk to me.
Okay. That's good. I hope you get your master's.